Dear listeners, welcome to Faces of Digital Health, a podcast about digital health and how healthcare systems around the world adopt technology with me, Tiasza Zajc. Voice tech is one of the tech areas with high potential to optimize healthcare processes for providers and ease chronic disease management for patients. In today's episode, you'll hear a lot about the basics of voice technology in healthcare. How far have we come from futuristic ideas where everything would be operated with only the help of voice? How do innovators reduce the risk of misunderstandings in designing voice technologies? How does development of a human-like bot look like? I spoke with Julia Hoxha, co-founder and CEO of Zana, a healthcare startup which helps organizations to build artificially intelligent voice and chatbot solutions. Julia's background is in computer science with a heavy focus in machine learning and particularly in conversational AI, which is also the core technology of Zana. We discussed the latest trends in the use of voice in healthcare and how far, beyond just scheduling appointments with the help of Alexa, have we come by 2022. This episode is supported by EIT Health Germany. EIT Health Germany is one of the 8 knowledge and innovation communities currently funded by the European Institute of Innovation and Technology, EIT. EIT Health Germany connects 150 renowned partners from the industry, research and education from Germany, Austria and Switzerland. If you're a startup working in the field of digital health or biotech and don't know EIT Health Germany yet, I would encourage you to visit eit-health.de, that's eit-health.de, where you'll find more about innovation, acceleration and education programs. In fact, the application deadline for many of these programs is March 14th, so do check the link in the show notes to identify if any of these programs can aid in the growth or development of your company. This is the third out of the 12 interviews this year in which you will hear stories from biotech and digital health startups that have participated in the EIT Health programs. Also find the link to the previous two episodes in the show notes. Now let's jump to the discussion with Julia. I really wonder, futuristic movies have long used voice recognition and natural language processing as tools that replace typing for various sorts of purposes. So how would you describe the current reality of the use of voice technologies in healthcare?
I would certainly believe that we are not still at the stage of replacing typing. The text and the typing modes of interaction are still the standard in interfacing software systems for most users, or actually the majority of users. However, I do believe that we have been seeing a remarkable development in conversational AI, and here I'd both include the chatbot as well as the voice assistant technology, but especially also voice communication, which has gained a slow but also quite an interesting traction. In terms of the market adoption, specifically in healthcare, voice technology is still in its infancy and has not reached its maturity. It has a much bigger potential to become an important and significant wave of innovation in healthcare. And when we look more practically at the different applications and how they are used on the market, I think that this potential is already showcased along different verticals, but with different stages of maturity in terms of adoption, in terms of reachability. I would highlight specifically in functionalities of reducing administrative tasks and the burden for physicians and medical staff, technologies, voice technologies such as those used for medical transcription, where the physicians can basically dictate with voice and interface with electronic health record system, have been and still are rather more established and have gained considerable use and traction. However, we have to also look at the big potential that this technology has in terms of increasing better engagement and better modes of interaction on the end user side with patients for adherence to the treatment, for information functions. And I think that here we have also seen many showcases for also proving this potential and the added value. But here I would say that we still need more time to see the full maturity and the adoption of this technology. And lastly, of course, using voice as a tool for diagnosis and monitoring. We can with pleasure dive into this and so later in terms of voice biomarker, but we've also been seeing here quite a remarkable development of use of voice as a diagnostic tool, but still in its infancy when it comes to the transfer to the market and the adoption in the healthcare market.
The ideas are definitely there, and I can say that I can see how rich the voice is when you record podcasts, and if when you also do the voiceovers for the introductions, if it doesn't work in one go and you try to do it again, you can immediately hear that it doesn't sound exactly the same. And if I try to transfer that observation to healthcare, there's so much potential that we still have to uncover. But if I go back a little bit in the history of the development of voice technologies in healthcare. I still remember in 2017 when I visited the Health 2.0 conference in San Jose, Alexa, and basically just scheduling doctor's appointments with the help of Alexa was the thing that seemed as the top innovation on everybody's mind, and everybody was fascinated that you could automate that by talking to a voice assistant. So tell me a little bit more about Zana and which part of voice related to healthcare are you addressing with your solutions?
So we have built a conversational AI platform which enables healthcare organizations to design and to deploy their own chatbot and voice assistant. So I'd like to highlight that several modes of interaction are included in terms of how we communicate with users, be it the chatbot interaction as well as through voice assistance. With this technology, we have targeted and are showcasing different applications. The first one, which is has also been our primary focus, is in using this platform, the technology, to deploy and to offer patient companions for chronic disease management. One of the lead products, which we're also launching to the market with the aim of having it as an app on prescription, so to be reimbursed by statutory health insurance, is a patient companion for heart failure. And the chatbot and the voice assistant is used, it's a mobile application which embeds chatbot and voice assistant, and we use this technology primarily for a better engagement of the user with specific use cases such as reporting their symptoms, reporting their vital signs, reminding them to better adhere to their treatment regimen, but also for information functions. So users or patients are able to ask questions, and this patient companion within the mobile application will answer dedicated questions to this medical condition, to heart failure. And very importantly, we have to say that to deploy such technology, we rely on very carefully designed and standardized knowledge bases. For example, in this case, National Patient Guidelines for Heart Failure, which we feed to the system, to the bot, in order to then expose this information through the different modes of interaction with a patient. A similar solution we are also now having in a clinical trial validation for the indication of COPD and asthma with the University Clinic in Maastricht. And we already have the first patient using it on a daily basis for chronic disease management, but also to conduct speech tasks so that we can further also record their voice and potentially also analyze their voice for different purposes. And so, as I mentioned, the first track is patient companion for chronic disease management with the functionalities that I highlighted. And the second track is, again, patient companions, but for clinical research. And here we serve to pharmaceutical companies a solution that they can use for clinical study or post-market research.
So how much typing is still involved in this? In the beginning, we mentioned that we are not yet at the stage where you could just talk to an AI system and it would require zero typing. So in your case, when patients use these solutions, how much do they need to manually input data?
The application, the end user application, is designed as such that it offers the user the different modes of interaction. Because this is also a new technology and they still have their smartphone, so they still have a visual representation, we want to make sure that patients in the end can fulfill their tasks. And most of the time, especially for the two products that I mentioned, we are dealing with an older population group. As such, we offer multimodal interaction, both in chat to type the text or with a form of what we call quick reply so that they can just click on an option for a specific possible answer. And of course, the option to also interact just with voice. So we make sure to have this multimodal interface. Faces, then I think the usage of the voice in comparison to the text depends on the specific task. For many tasks, they still rely on typing. So we see it also in majority of users, depending, for example, on, let's say, an information task or some kind of reporting. When it comes to dedicated tasks that we have in terms of speech and voice analysis, we see here how they very nicely interact with the voice, where we, for example, ask them to execute a particular physical activity and after that to read a well-balanced text or to report through voice how they're feeling today and what are the concerns that they've been having during the day. So in for this task, we see that the let's say, acceptance or the wish and the need to use the voice interfaces is higher. So I think it also depends a lot on the task at hand and the use cases.
And if we try to just explore a little bit further that use case, one of the most frustrating things that can happen when using a voice assistant is if you have an accent and then the AI doesn't understand what you're saying or it transcribes your words completely wrong. How are you addressing? And I also was wondering, is it when you gather data, is it just free text that then researchers go through or do you also do any structuring of the data?
Yeah, two parts of the question. The first one dealing with the accuracy in terms of both the speech recognition, but also the text understanding. So the natural language understanding component is composed of both translating the speech to text and then, of course, also to understanding the text in terms of what is the intent of the user, what are the concepts, the entities they're talking about. So in the first part, we, of course, there is a struggle. Of course, there is a big challenge. And we help. Also have cases depending on the target group of the users where you have the different dialects, you have the different accents, the different ages. What we try to do, and this is of course a continuous struggle and self-improvement also of the technology, is to shape as much as possible into the domain of interest. To be a little bit more, let's say, precise or concrete, if we are now having this patient companion for heart failure and we know that the question at hand relates to symptom tracking of heart failure, we already have a very well-crafted database of the possible symptoms. And when doing the speech recognition, if something like, let's say, fatigue comes up and it's confused with another word, we already have a predefined, acceptable set of options which we can basically pre-filter and make a better prediction in terms of what is the correctly classified instance in that case. So I would say to wrap it up, fine-tuning and shaping by using domain knowledge is very important. And this is very actually also connected to your second part of the question. We do a lot of training when it comes to different formulations or the different variations of how text can be formulated. But in at the core, one particular and very strong component of the platform is also the semantic the semantic structuring of the knowledge bases. So basically having ontologies for medications, ontologies for diseases, for symptoms, which is well-structured data. And this is also one of the biggest assets that we work a lot with, is well-structured data in this domain, so that we're able to also deal with that example that I mentioned, or also when we are understanding or trying to understand the text and to map what is the concept that basically is included in the utterance of the user. Certainly, structured knowledge is a key component also to improving this understanding.
Yeah, that can have a major effect on the clinical decision support systems that might be used as a follow-up to these inputs and just connectivity with EHRs and other electronic systems that require structured data, so you can get meaningful output of it. But if we go a step back to the more patient-facing part of interacting with these solutions, we have different cultural backgrounds, we use different languages, we are raised in different ways. What we will perceive as a nice or polite answer might differ a lot. So if we go see communication and language from that perspective, how do you make sure that the conversational AI is as human as possible? So do you work with a lot of patients to see how they would ask a specific thing, because one question can be posed on several different ways. How do you fine-tune the language so it's friendly and comfortable to the user that's using the solution?
I believe there are two parts of that. On one side, the ability, as we also mentioned, to understand the language, because in a way, if you are interacting with not intelligent and let's say not so smart system that is not even getting what you're saying, then we wouldn't even hope of having, let's say, an intelligent or a human conversational AI, human-like conversational AI. So the first part, of course, is the ability to have a high accuracy as possible in understanding the language, which we also mentioned. And for this, of course, the difficulty is not even if we leave the accent or the dialect aside, the different ways of formulating even the same concern, of formulating the different questions. We have here a two-step approach, I would say. The first one, it's also one of the biggest challenges that we've encountered in the last years, is to collect or to put these data sets together, because these do not exist. Let's say how the different patients would report a specific acute symptoms in heart failure. So we would, of course, go into researching the different forums, the different open sources, and also in collaboration with our in-house conversation design, but also with a network of doctors, we try to have a consolidated data set. And to give an example, in heart failure, for let's say we have around 13 different symptoms in acute status, and to train how the bot would understand a patient that would report a symptom as a commentary of how they're feeling during the day, then for these 13 symptoms, we have put together a data set of almost 2,000 different formulations and utterances. And this is just the cold start. So this is just the start of feeding the system and ingesting it. And the second part of the approach is, of course, the self-learning and the improvement over time. And this is also the beauty and the power of such system, that the more they're being used, and this is exactly our goal right now, to have a broader user base and high reachability, because by having more formulations, you put it into this analysis loop and you try to identify where were the fallbacks, how do I improve it, and then you have even a larger data set that you can process. And the second part of the component is the natural language generation. When we talk about how does it feel when the chatbot or the voice bot is responding to the patient. And here, of course, it requires a lot of crafting. We have, for example, domain expertise also in linguistic, but also in psychology, because depending on the different groups, if this is a child user or if it is a very old, very sick chronic disease patient, then you'd also have different ways and nuances of how you answer that question. So, of course, the usual principles here is to define the persona of the user, but also the persona of the chatbot, with what kind of empathy they respond. In German particularly, this is the very first distinction that you have to make. Do you talk to them with du or with sie? So this is both the form of you, but one is very formal, another one is informal. And then the whole formulation of the natural language generation will depend on the, let's say, even this simple component. So this is the approach that we follow.
And how many languages are you currently supporting? Because you mentioned German, I would think that English would be your go-to language.
So when we started Zana, the first patient companion or voice assistant that we developed was for information function, and this was in English. So we fed to the assistant a huge data set from licensed sources, but also with sources developed with our network of doctors to the agent. And this was mostly for medical question answering. Then another, this lead product that I mentioned is in the German language, which we want to launch as a DIGA, an app on prescription. We have also the other application with a Uniklinik Maastricht in Dutch. And we also have another application for a clinical trial in French to accompany patients during a first-in-man clinical trial of an implant. So the technology in itself is, I would say, agnostic to the language. But the power and the accuracy that you get to understand the language and to generate it is very language dependent, in the sense that the more knowledge base you put into it, the more you craft it, of course, the better it will perform.
What would you say are the hardest things to tackle in conversational AI in healthcare?
I would see the challenges, maybe I would outline them according to the different verticals or the different areas where I see the challenges, and maybe we can point out to what is the number one challenge. But I think each of them in itself is demanding and it's challenging enough. The first angle that we look at it is on the technology side. This is always a continuous improvement of technology that needs further improvement. And I really do believe that we haven't reached the maturity there yet, both in terms of the speech recognition, also in terms of the natural language processing, to, as we mentioned already, to be able to have high accuracy in classifying, detecting the different formulation, different dialects, phrases, clinical language, and so on. But on the technology side, also very important, which is often also still neglected or still in its very early stage, is the dialogue management approach, to really have conversations. So right now, we mostly have systems that have more of a, let's say, rule-based approach and not purely a machine learning-based approach in crafting and learning the conversation of our data. And I think this is still a challenge that both on the research side and the R&D technology development side is being addressed. So we tackle the technology angle. And the second one is the market transfer, because this is a different a set of difficulties and challenges. So how you have this, let's say, cool piece of technology, but then how do you bring this innovation to the market? How can the market adopt it? And for healthcare, maybe I would also put this in the top list, because healthcare is a very, as we know, highly regulated market. We're now coming with different regulations, the medical device regulation, the AI ethical regulation from the EU, then we need to go through very rigorous clinical studies to gain evidence. And most standards are not well established yet. What is evidence for an AI system? So that we can get credibility, that the users and the physicians can also see actually the potential and the credibility in this system. So I would say that the technology development is one thing with the two components that I mentioned, but also the market adoption in a very tricky market. In the EU, it's also very fragmented with different regulations, different languages. Yeah, as a founder and the CEO, to bring these innovations to the market is certainly not easy.
So what's the strategy that you are taking to trying to tackle that challenge?
Initially, the strategy that we have been following is to partner and co-develop with top university clinic, and not because you need to have the expertise in that medical domain, but also to get the assurance, the credibility, the safety about what you are developing. So I think this is certainly a key, let's say, ingredient or part of the strategy. And the second one, we've been rather following the clinical validation approach to bring to the market rather what we also call the digital therapeutic solution, so to gain evidence, to get into a controlled clinical study, and then to show both the potential in terms of the clinical outcome, but also the assurance and the credibility of these solutions after having been validated for then market entry and reimbursement models with payers or health insurance organizations. So I would distinguish these two as parts of the strategy that we've been following up to now, to navigate the healthcare system, which is, of course, very complicated.
We talked about digital biomarkers, voice biomarkers in the beginning. We just mentioned that. So is that also something that you're looking into?
We have been working on voice as an instrument for health monitoring and detection of disease progression, because we really think that voice is a powerful instrument to develop such biomarkers. Since we already had the infrastructure for capturing voice through the conversational AI platform, through the interaction with the patient, we did further advance our work in developing new features in these voice recordings for potential detection of specific symptoms. And this line of work is something that we have been pursuing with our medical partner in Maastricht in the Netherlands for COPD and asthma, specifically for a disease where voice impairment is particularly prominent and you can use it as an instrument to detect disease progression. And another project that we are also about to start soon, and we have received funding from the German Ministry of Research, is to analyze voice also for heart failure patients. And here the use case would be to potentially and ambitiously do analytics of the voice for detection of a heart decompensation. So this is also another deterioration or progression of the disease for heart failure patient where their lungs are swollen, and this is something that can also become prominent in the deterioration of voice. We are looking certainly into this area. I believe that we have already seen some very interesting innovation, even in the scope of COVID-19, with a couple of solutions also being developed in this area. I believe that such solutions, they still need to see the adoption to the market, and certainly promising with high potential.
I was just wondering, to which extent is all this still in the research phase, where you have an indication but you are hardly starting to figure out what can you see from voice, and to which extent are those findings actually further developed to realize the potential in real world?
Yeah, I think this is exactly at the, let's say, the sweet spot. There is already some solid technology development. Even in-house, we have been using open data sets because we don't have exclusive data sets for this disease. That's why we're doing also these projects to gather more data and voice recordings to analyze. And we certainly see that this is promising. For example, in detecting COVID-19 from the voice recording or from the coughing, there has been development and accuracy already showcased. However, when it comes to entry to the market and the adoption, I think it's still in its early stage. It also has to tackle the challenges that we mentioned before. These kind of technologies have, especially when they're used as diagnostic tools, they have to go through regulatory improvement, through clinical study validation. And these are, of course, processes that take some time. They're also demanding on their own. So I certainly believe that they're coming to the market very soon, and their adoption would certainly be promising, but still at a very early stage, not mature enough.
How do you see the challenges with potential clinical risk associated to voice technologies? Because if at the moment you have paper records and something is illegible and causes a misunderstanding, a quite similar situation could happen with voice if the natural language processing misunderstands and misreads what was said or meant?
Yeah, that's actually a great and a very valid question. The one solution or one strategy that we've been following up to now, it's also what I mentioned before, this multimodal interaction, but also the display. Most of our applications are now embedded as part of a mobile application. So the user also has the interface to really see, okay, what they transmitted with the voice, how it was translated into text, and to show it. And we also include in the dialogue flow a step of reconfirmation, so to say, from the patient, especially when we are hitting classifications with not highly predicted scores. In that case, where we are, so to say, in a gray area with the classification scores, we design the flow of the dialogue with the patient in a way that we ask for confirmation. And this gives us, on one side, this security that this is indeed what the patient meant, and this wouldn't, of course, have a risk into further communicating this for some kind of clinical decision support. And on the other side, it also helps the system in itself to recorrect itself and to learn this for the next time, so you don't have to ask the user for reconfirmation and bother him or her eventually.
As a startup reaching clinical professionals and reputable institutions is definitely a challenge. After all, the innovation is booming, so a lot of people would want to work with clinical experts, and clinical experts have limited amounts of time and energy to dedicate to that. So in your case, you also participated in the EIT Health Germany Healthcare Startups Meet Healthcare Providers program. What was that experience like for you? How did it help you?
We were part of the first edition of this program, Startup Meet Healthcare Provider, which took place last year. But we have also been active in several different initiatives. So we are a partner of EIT Health in general, mm-hmm. not just Germany. We are a partner of one of the projects that is also being funded by EIT Health, a very interesting project where actually our solution is used in the clinical trial for capturing patient-reported outcomes. We have been part of different initiatives in accelerators or summer schools. So very active member. And I always call EIT Health as a treasure package because you can find there so many different partners, a very big network, a very valuable network. So once you're part of it, it's really an added value to approach and to get proximity to many top clinics, medical partners, pharma companies, and so on. We initially joined the program with a goal precisely of approaching or potentially getting a partnership or some kind of pilot project with the healthcare providers that were part of the program. And I certainly agree with you that approaching these partners, finding this partnership is a whole work in itself. We have been, I would have to say, quite successful in being engaged with different innovation programs, with having these partners by our side. However, when it comes to more pragmatic solutions where you want to validate, for example, something that you want to put on the market, then of course their resources and their investment is limited. It takes, the challenge is higher. It takes more work and more time to get the right partner. So this was also the goal. I believe at the end of the program, we certainly benefited a lot from the different experts, be it on the side of the healthcare provider, but also the different experts in the ecosystem that were invited into the program to highlight or to point to the different challenges, the lessons learned, how they have addressed them. And on the other side, we also were exposed and also got the financing to enter, or at least to try to enter the EIT Health Investor Network, which then also succeeded after a vetting process. So I would say this was also another outcome or end result of this program. And now we're part of this network, investor network, and looking forward to the upcoming developments.
Yeah, you were rated as the gold company by the EIT Investor Network, and that actually happened this year, right?
Yes, it's very recent news. We started the application, as I mentioned, as part of being in the program. So we were exposed to the network. We were aware of the network. We applied. And then after an assessment procedure with investor experts, as well as with a committee, we were vetted to join this exclusive group of investors in healthcare in Europe, and also to be, yeah, to have the highest rating, meaning that we So basically what this means is that we are a mature enough company for the investment round that we are looking for. But this is very recent. This is, as I mentioned, only a few weeks ago. So we are now in the preparation process to be promoted into the network.
You're currently fundraising a seed round of funding. So if you would have to pinpoint, what are your key expectations of being the part of the investor network? Is it just going to be much easier for you to get to the potential right investors than it would be if you were a startup trying to find the right partner for the future progress of the company? So what are the key benefits that you expect?
It's exactly what you described, what you pinpointed. I think the added value of the network is that you have almost everyone in the European scene in healthcare, so specialized for the healthcare industry in the network. So, of course, the accessibility and the reachability, I suspect and I hope, is higher and is easier to reach them out. I think what also helps is the status that we got in the rating, because it will attract more awareness, so it will be more attractive also for investors to look at. So I think these two perspectives are what we're also looking for, or what we think is also the added value of being in such a network. I would have to say that specifically for the value offering that we have as a company and for the applications that we provide, reaching to investors that know the domain, that know the struggle, the regulatory barriers, is of course of benefit. And I hope that this network is also the right one for attracting the investment.
Speaking of the market, I have one more question for you, and that is, you're actually leading activities of the working group in health at the German AI Association. Can you, as a last question, share a little bit of what's happening in that association? Are there any interesting solutions or research projects that you could share that are presented or developed inside the association?
I'm really glad that you asked this question, because I'm also proud of what the association has achieved and how it has developed in the last years. The German AI Association started in 2018 with a membership or a group of almost 60 companies, and now has almost 400 members in the German ecosystem working in AI. And I proudly and I confidently can say that this is the strongest common voice, or the instrument for a common voice of all these companies working in AI. And as such, the association in itself has also the mission to promote this work, but also to work with policymakers and in order to tackle, to identify and to raise basically the challenges that these members have in being successful in the market, but also in making Germany one of the most attractive spots for AI in Europe and beyond. And I have to say that there is a very interesting series of activities and projects in the sense of the networking and reaching to policymakers in identifying also these pain points and to promote the work of AI companies in Germany further. When we look maybe more practically at the AI development, and so basically to see what is, let's say, demonstrated already in terms of the potential and where it is leading. Especially when we look at the healthcare, because generally, of course, we would have a lot to talk about. But when we look at our members in the healthcare group, which I'm also leading, I would have to say that the applications are certainly diverse. What I would surely highlight is advanced development in image processing and recognition, which finds applications in different domains, be it on the dental imaging images or the eye retinal shape analysis or CT scans. And another line of application is also when we look more at the, let's say, user-centric AI fitness coaches, which are AI-based in real-time analysis of the video and giving feedback, or cases of a bedside assistance in communicating with the medical staff to ease their administrative task and their burden, both through voice and different modes of interaction. So I'd say highly diverse, some of them already having established, let's say, maturity in the adoption, and some still at the early stages, but certainly very promising to also become the leader, I believe, in Germany and so beyond.
Just maybe if you'd like, there's various thoughts about AI development in Europe on the global level. There is this sense that we cannot compete with other global players such as China and US. What's your reflection from that perspective on the AI development in Europe? Based on what you said, it sounds quite lively. Any additional comment that you would like to add in that regard?
Sure. Actually, I gave a speech a couple of months back in difficulties of AI, particularly in healthcare in Germany, but I suppose this very well reflects also other areas. I certainly believe that we in Germany, but also in Europe, have the potential for developing a very strong AI technology. And this is certainly also showcased and reflected in the different publication works and research outcomes from very high quality institutions, academic institutions, research institutions. I think the sweet spot is in the market transfer. There has been, of course, a lot of initiatives going on and supporting this transfer of innovation. And one of the difficulties is, of course, dealing with the regulation, but also another one is the investment. And I think this is where we certainly need different ways of support, both on the private investment, attracting also foreign investment, because in the German market, but also in the European market, is a rather more conservative, very risk averse. But also on the public funding in helping new researcher or new innovators to transfer their very cool piece of technology to the market. So I would say balancing the regulatory framework so that it enables and it promotes innovation, and coupling it with more flexible and supportive instruments for investment, be it private and public, is the combination that would certainly make us push us forward and become one of the leaders also in innovative solutions in the market based on AI.
You've been listening to Faces of Digital Health. A quick reminder: the application deadline for many of the EIT Health Germany's programs is March 14th, so do check out the link in the show notes to identify if any of the programs can aid the growth or development of your company. Stay tuned!